Good morning, good afternoon, and good evening to all our listeners. This is the Business Day Spotlight, your destination for African business made simple. My name is Mudiwa Gavaza, and for today, it is a Friday, which means we get into the top economics news of the week. A very interesting week, you know, starting off with some unemployment figures that were given to us by, you know, Stats SA. The president spoke. The U.S. election is still going on, even though most people were celebrating this past weekend, and at the same time we seem to have had some data coming out on the manufacturing front. And to help us to unpack what all of this means for you and I, you know, on a daily basis in the economy, we are joined by Chief Economist at Pax Africana, Dumiso Hadebe, someone who is not a stranger to the Business Day Spotlight. Dumiso, greetings to you. It's been a long time.
Good day, Mudiwa. Indeed, it has been. Thank you so much for having me. I trust that you are still well and in good health.
No, we're trying to hang in there, you know, because COVID-19 is still real, despite how much fatigue people have about the issue. So, you know, we just try to stay cognizant of that. And one of the, you know, key ones in the economy that COVID-19 has really done away with is jobs. You know, it's done a lot to destroy livelihoods for a lot of people in and around South Africa. What's the latest on that front?
Certainly, you're quite correct, Mudiwa. COVID-19 has indeed devastated the employment situation in South Africa. I mean, we saw this week the data that came out from Stats SA in respect of the unemployment figures. And it rebounded to the levels that we're used to 30.1% for the past quarter. And there was a bit of confusion in the quarter that preceded that one, when unemployment was at the 23% level, as to how come did the unemployment number drop, albeit a lot of companies were not operational. A number of companies had also retrenched workers. And so there was that question around how did that happen. And quite correctly, I had anticipated that there would be this rebound, because in the data, in the previous data prior to the one that was released this week by Statistics South Africa, it was informed by the, in the main, the definition of the unemployment rate, whereas we have two definitions in the main. The first definition being the stricter definition, which is typically what is used in the headline reporting. So, for instance, the 23.1% unemployment figure in the previous data set that was released is the stricter definition of unemployment. Then we have, and that stricter definition, pardon me, in essence, it relates to people who are actively looking for work but are unable to find work. And then we have the broader definition of unemployment, which is a much higher figure typically, which also accounts for folks who are also now discouraged for of actively looking for work. And so during the lockdown period, for example, when a lot of companies were not permitted to be operational, a lot of people were not actively looking for work, and they were not encouraged to look for work. And so that is why we recorded a decrease from 29% to 23% in that stricter definition of unemployment. That is what in formed that number. And then you would see that now, after the easing down of economic regulations, the opening up of industries from level 5 to now level 1, and increased easing of regulations, as we've seen again this week by the president, that also has led to this rebound to the 30.1% number unemployment figure in South Africa. Well, what seems to consistently be coming through, Mudiwa, is that and the unemployment figures, young people continue to be adversely affected and disproportionately affected by the unemployment situation in South Africa. When you look at the data, we see that youth between the ages of 16 to 24 have an unemployment rate of in excess of 60%, and youth between 25 to 35 have a youth unemployment rate north of 30%. And so we continue to see that, based on the nature of the unemployment situation in South Africa, it continued to adversely affect young people in particular. And a lot of it is indeed structural in nature, as we've said on the program before. And we continue to see the same themes coming out quarter on quarter as the data set is released by Statistics South Africa.
You know, as you're talking, I'm just thinking about, you know, how tough things have been, you know, over the last couple of months, but even before, you know, COVID-19 had become a thing, you know, youth had already been facing some of these issues already. So given, you know, all of that, what do you make of the tone of the president's speech? Because it seems he was, you know, it was a bit of a different speech. It was more of a, we are reducing the restrictions even more, but please be careful.
It certainly was. Certainly what I interpreted from the president's speech was indeed that the very difficult trade-offs that he had to make between the public health situation and the performance of the economy, in this time around, it leaned more towards the economy and really bestowing the responsibility on each and every one of us as citizens in terms of taking care of our own health and ensuring that we adhere to the necessary protocols so that we don't have, or so that we're not adversely affected by the health situation that emanates from the coronavirus pandemic. And I think it's quite timely, Mudiwa, because where the South African economy finds itself now is that it needs to recover. And we do know that even pre-COVID levels of the SA economy, we were already in a recession. We already had challenges with SOEs, Eskom SA in particular. We already had high unemployment. Our macroeconomic fundamentals were not favorable to us and the growth prospects or fortunes that we would hope for a growing economy. And so we would see now that given the leaning towards the opening of the economy and ensuring that tourism as a very important sector and the South African economy is able to rebound again, given its high employment multiplier. My anticipation is that was really the thinking of the president in respect of the COVID-19 response. But ultimately, he was calling upon our conscience, each and every one of us, to really take responsibility of our own health situation, because a number of companies have shut down, a number of companies have had to retrench, and others have had to reduce remuneration for their employees and get into structured agreements around what remuneration looks like. And for an economy that we would hope that would perform at least at a base level of 3% in the future, it becomes quite important to then start putting in place those kinds of measures to ensure that we're able to have some kind of gradual recovery.
And then I guess on the same front, what do you make of, I guess, government's response during the year? I think a lot has been said about it, but at least, you know, given your work, at least, because my understanding, Pax African Agas are, you know, in the investment space, possibly maybe even, you know, conversations with clients or just doing business on an everyday level, you know, the people, you know, actual economic actors, you know, how are they actually feeling on the ground?
So it's quite interesting, Mudiwa, because for instance, the industries that we play in the main are in the advisory services, and then we also dabble in mining, we dabble in construction, and we dabble in technologies. We've seen that a lot of the services-oriented industries have actually recorded a significant boom. If we look at, for instance, the technology industry, that has recorded a significant boom as people increasingly started thinking around digitization of their processes and the automation of their own processes. Prior to the COVID-19 pandemic, there was indeed a lot of discussion around what is the role of automation, RPL, and all of these fourth industrial revolution related concepts and tools. And we've started seeing our team being requested to do more of that kind of stuff. What does it mean as well to automate and digitize processes from paperwork to it being digitized and that being exported into an Excel sheet to be able to conduct analysis and then therefore do reporting? We've seen a significant pickup in that area. But for instance, sectors such as mining and construction, similarly to the macroeconomic situation, have recorded a significant dip over this period, and they've been challenged quite significantly. And one of the key things there is that those industries are very capital intensive. And so if market participants don't necessarily have the kind of cash to burn that is required in order to ensure that they're able to be profitable, then they've been significantly adversely affected by the pandemic. And of course, the uncertainty that was associated with what would the lockdown regulations entail for those industries operating at 50% capacity, 70% capacity, and whether or not operating at those levels would be profitable for the various projects, that played a big role in those specific sectors. And what we saw market participants do was to hold back on certain projects. I've come across a number of contractors, for example, in the construction industry that got into agreements and negotiations with the government at the time, because remember, they were also affected by the supplementary budget and the revising down of allocations for infrastructure projects. And as a consequence of that, that had an implication on the amount of work that contractors would be able to do in this fiscal year, given a revised down of the budget. And so we saw a lot of those negotiations taking place with a government in terms of infrastructure projects. On the mining side, we saw some significant capital holding or hoarding, as it were, primarily because of the regulations that entailed exporting of certain minerals and the limitations that were associated with that. So mining activity over the lockdown period, especially in the earlier season of the lockdown, was withheld quite significantly as a consequence of that. But again, the advisory services and the technology components and market participants in those areas, they've received some good business over this time.
And then can you talk to us about, the state of manufacturing in the country? I'm not sure whether any of the sectors that you guys are involved with, because you mentioned construction, mining, advisory, technology, on that end, whether or not, there's, own manufacturing that's happening, somewhere in that value chain. But can you, maybe give us some insight into what's going on the manufacturing side?
On the manufacturing side, so manufacturing specifically is one of the important sectors in the SA economy. Well, it certainly contributes 11% of GDP. And what we've seen, for instance, on the manufacturing side, as it relates, for instance, to steel manufacturing, we noted a spike in terms of the prices that were associated with steel manufacturing, but also that one of the drivers for that spike in steel manufacturing was attributed, number one, to, of course, the lockdown itself. But number two, there was a limited supply of steel, which was also which was a very interesting phenomenon over this period, because it was both on the demand and on the supply side, which led to increased pricing specifically for steel manufacturers. And we would know how important steel is for in South Africa, for instance, for economies such as in the south of Gauteng, in the Vaal region where Mittal operates, and we know that it contributes quite significantly to employment in those regions. And so that contributed quite significantly to was the performance of the manufacturing sector in that instance. However, with the gradual easing of the lockdown, which I think the South African government has, they've really tried to be as prudent as possible to balance out between the public health concerns and the requirements of the economy. Because as time progressed with the gradual easing of lockdown, we started to see a gradual pickup of demand. We started to see an increase in the orders of sales. We started to see renegotiations with workers in terms of what their employment structure would look like. And also for remuneration and incentive professionals who work in the human resources units of various companies. They've also been seeking some kind of counsel as to how then do we structure incentives and remuneration for workers in this instance. For some workers, for instance, who had to be receive a partial salary, How then do we structure it so that it does not, in real terms, adversely affect their households? So, for instance, balancing the partial remuneration with some kind of tax incentives that they would have an agreement with the revenue, with the collector of revenue, so that in real terms, workers are not as adversely affected by the partial salary receipts. On the other side, what does it look like for their own personal development as given increased digitization, even in the manufacturing sector and automation of processes in the sector itself? What would that mean then for workers and for the business in terms of their own personal development so that they are able to repurpose themselves, their skill sets and their roles in the sector as well? So the manufacturing sector, as quite an important sector in the economy, has had those challenges over this period of the lockdown. And I think it's also related to the kind of evolution that would be required for the sector in order for it to also contribute more significantly to the performance of the South African economy.
The technology bit, I want to touch on that, you know, just to extend that thought, because you're talking about how certain processes have been automated in some instances, and we started off the show talking about the loss of jobs in the economy. Before COVID came into effect, one of the trends in South Africa, looking at financial services and some of the, you know, customer faces, telecoms companies, I'm thinking about, you know, Telkom, I'm thinking companies like EOH, etc., that were going through, you know, restructuring processes and the like. What do you think these last few months of lockdown have done in terms of either accelerating or decelerating that move towards, you know, replacing repetitive tasks with machines? Because you then get rid of the quote-unquote headache of, you know, thinking about remuneration and incentives and, you know, all of that stuff, and you still ensure that you're able to, you know, produce your products, you know, with a reduced workforce, which means your health and safety concerns are also reduced. You know, where are you seeing things on that front?
I think the lockdown and the pandemic has actually created that burning platform of the kind of changes that do need to take place within industry. Prior, the discussion was there, but I don't think it was as practical for individuals, or there wasn't a pressure point as much as what the lockdown and the pandemic created for organizations. For instance, Mudiwa, I'll share with you one of our clients who came through on the advisory and technology end came through and said, look, guys, yes, my people need to work from home, but the difficulty is that a lot of the work that they do is paper-based, and we have not necessarily digitized the processes that we have so that they can be able to work from home. Yes, they have their laptops. We're giving them connectivity to be able to work from home. We can connect via Teams, Skype, and so on, Zoom at home. But the difficulty is that they need actual hard files to be able to work from home. And one of those aspects was now, a burning platform was created for them to digitize their processes. And one of the interventions that we developed for them was an optical character recognition process, whereby it entails the scanning of all of their paper-based documentation, digitizing them and taking all of the important documentation, the components that require to be exported in Excel for analysis purposes, that was done, and those that needed to be saved in PDF and filed accordingly and stored on a cloud with secure cybersecurity protocols, that also needed to be done. So that was a whole process for a lot of the, even some of the smallest administrative burdens that that company had. And we saw that the efficiency gains increased by 27% as a consequence of that particular intervention. So in the technology industry, that I would anticipate is the common theme for a lot of organizations. And I would anticipate that even for the public sector, it has increasingly created that burning platform, because this was a funny joke that we would share in the office to say there were certain instances that given the increase in Microsoft Teams and Skype phone calls, folks were like, no, we are now in 4IR. And yet, these platforms had been around for quite some time, and they're not necessarily for IR interventions. So really, the pressure points and the burning platform is indeed there. And now it places a serious business challenge for companies in the sector to be able to act on that so that it does not diminish their competitiveness in the market.
Now, it certainly does sound like companies are trying to, adopt to what's going on. And for a lot of companies, digitization seemed to have been more of a conversation than something that was being done practically. And, within a very short space of time, companies and a lot of businesses, small, medium, and large, decided that there was no other way to continue doing what they were doing, but to digitize their processes so that people could continue working from home, or else you'd just risk either going out of business or losing so much productivity during the period. But as we come to the end of the discussion, Dumiso, the US election, how are you finding it? Because it seems like, it's a never-ending drama. I think in the beginning there was that period because of mail-in ballots, getting the actual results took a bit longer than what we're used to. But then, Joe Biden seems to have, come out victorious. But at the same time, you've got Trump saying, "No, I'm not going anywhere," which is something that hasn't been seen with the last couple of few presidents. Previous presidents. But more importantly, how are you seeing that election, impacting or affecting us here on the southern tip of Africa?
Sure. It's been very interesting to watch, Mudiwa, as you've quite rightly mentioned, given the occurrences that have been taking place in the US as a consequence of these elections. Look, prior to the elections itself, the market had indeed priced in a Biden win. I don't know whether that was slightly too optimistic or not, but indeed, that's why we even recorded a significant strengthening of the rand after the pronouncements of a Biden win, because fund managers, bankers, and institutional investors had actually priced in a Biden win, and hence we reached those 15 rand to the dollar levels. And so, as a consequence, why that took place is because of the foreign policy positions of both Trump and Joe Biden as it relates to Africa, and also some of their economic policy positions as well informed the pricing of or the favorable pricing of a Biden win. One of the key components, for instance, is the position that or the polar positions that Biden and Donald Trump has as it relates to the Paris Climate Agreement, whereby Biden had anticipated that for his administration, he would actually rejoin that particular agreement as it relates to climate change. And of course, that was perceived to be quite favorable, particularly for the more progressives or progressive diplomats in the global political economy. Additionally, it had other implications because you remember in the beginning of Donald Trump's administration, there was a whole conversation around the updating and the amended Africa Growth Opportunity Act and what that means for Africa and its products that are being exported into the US market. You would know there were some tensions there as it relates to that policy, and some concessions had to be made, which has had adverse effects for the South African poultry industry. So there, it is perceived that Joe Biden would have a more diplomatic and cordial approach as it relates to foreign policy, and particularly as that foreign policy relates to Africa and South Africa. And so certainly what Joe Biden then brings in the global political economy and foreign policy environment, which has an implication on the performance of financial markets in South Africa, is some level of relative stability as it relates to the currency position of South Africa. The currency position is affected by what the US does, more so because the US and China, for example, are South Africa's top three trading partners, both on the import and export side of economic activity in the South African economy. And so, whatever position these two states have as it relates to one another, as it relates to trade, investment, and economic regulations, it ultimately has an impact in terms of capital flows that come in and out of the South African market. And so that is why then a priced-in Biden win and the strengthening of the rand as a result of the Biden win has had the positive implication that it has had, and it will offer some kind of relative stability in the medium term.
And then, sort of as a, a follow-up to what you've just said, I'm just thinking right now, what do you think this U.S. election plus, the handling of COVID by the two administrations, the U.S. and China, what do you think their different responses, etc., have done in terms of either increasing or decreasing their places as superpowers, economic superpowers in the world? Because there is this ongoing debate that the last 6 months has really seen the China growth story was something, that people had been watching for the last two decades, but that the last 6 months had really done a lot to just bring down the US, just given how they've handled the pandemic. So do you think that's, more talk, or, practically going forward, will we see that more emergence of, China as being, the superpower that people turn to going forward?
I think even to date, China still does have the competitive edge that is required to really be a global superpower and surpass the US in this instance. And I think even in their responses as to how the virus indeed emanated from Wuhan, but you would note even how the kind of interventions in terms of the restriction that they put in place and the management of the virus itself. Of course, with respect to China, there's always a question mark as it relates to whether or not some of the information or data is indeed authentic or not, given the approach to governance, but they continue to have the features that would enable them to be a competitive player in the global political economy. We know that one of Trump's positions was to ensure that American companies are bringing jobs back to the US. So, for instance, jobs that were exported to Chinese manufacturers as a result of lower prices and more efficiency gains and so on. That it can continue to be a narrative or an economic policy position that the US can continue to drive. But the reality of the matter, Mudiwa, is that if you and I had to decide where we would be manufacturing, say, for instance, we were wanted to manufacture a new cell phone, for example, if we had to choose whether we manufacture it in China or the US, my bet would be that we would still go for China, given the low production costs, and still we are still able to determine what kind of quality of a cell phone you still want to produce at which margin. And China continues to be competitive on that front. From a logistics perspective, we just saw Singles Day. It was just yesterday or the day before in China, where Alibaba had over 3,000 flights that was distributing various products as it relates to the Chinese economy. Singles Day is similar to Valentine's Day in China, quite a big day in that particular market. And they generated over $50 billion worth of revenue as a consequence of that one day. So China continues to be a significant market, even if you were to look at it from a population perspective. China is a population of 1 billion, whereas the US is a population of about one third of that. So it continues to have the features that will set it up to be more competitive and a global superpower, and indeed surpass the US in the near future, which is part of what Donald Trump's administration was trying to ensure does not happen.
So that's been it with Ndumiso Hadebe, who is the chief economist at Pax Africana, giving us insight into the week's top economics news, starting off talking about the unemployment figures that have just come out of Stats SA. You saw that the unemployment rate has rebounded to the 30% mark, coming from the 23% mark that we saw for the previous quarter. And Ndumiso just clearing up How, there's been that big discrepancy, and how it has to do more with the different definitions of what employment is, and seeking employment, discouraged workers, that type of thing. And also getting into the president's speech this week, because the state trying to strike that fine balance between the health and safety of the population versus the economic prospects of the country. And then just ending off talking about the manufacturing sector, and also some of the sectors that Pax Africana is actually dealing with, and the things that Dumisa and his team are seeing on the ground when they're dealing with their clients. And then we talked the US election and what that may mean for the South African economy. So thank you so much, Dumiso. Thank you as always.
Thank you so much, Mudiwa, and I look forward to another chat.
No, definitely.
This is Mudiwa's Take.
Another fascinating discussion about the economy, just going through what's going on in and around the country. And, when you take what's happening right now and then you just look at the president's speech this week, you can really see that, tug of war, of interests that's happening right now. And I think that's really indicative of where the world is, because at a time where you're seeing, increased restrictions in parts of the world like Europe, and what prospects that might have for the South African economy as one of the country's biggest trading partners, you then see that the decision to open up a bit further and reduce the travel restrictions, does begin to make sense, especially against the backdrop of unemployment figures that are upwards of 30% on the official side, and then maybe closer to 40% on what they call the unofficial side. I'm glad that Ndumiso went into great detail just around the different definitions that are being used on that front. And so when you look at what's going on this week, it really does seem like it was not an easy decision for the government to make. I remember we had a few weeks ago Chifiwa Chivengwa, who is CEO of the Tourism Business Council of SA, just talking about how much money they're losing each day on the tourism front. And when you think about the type of GDP contribution that's happening just in tourism, and how we're entering the festive season, and how this is usually a peak period for many travel and tourism operators in the country, you then start seeing some of the dynamics that the government is really pushing and pulling with. And one just hopes that people just adhere to the appeal, of the president to just be careful. I've heard something which has really stuck with me, to say that adherence to the COVID-19 safety and health precautions, in addition to just maintaining, your own health and safety, or the health and safety of those around you, your loved ones, your family, the people that you live with, just making sure that you don't have COVID-19, and make sure that you don't pass on the virus to, others around you. There's also the added responsibility that, as long as we are making sure that we are minimizing infections, it means that economic activity can continue, because past a certain point, the government has no choice but to lock us down again, which then further exacerbates an already bad situation. We're talking 30% now, but what happens when we're seeing a 35% unemployment figure on the official side, and more than 2.5-3 million jobs being lost because of a greater lockdown measures? So all of this is to just say that people, just be careful, do what you're meant to do, wear the mask, sanitize, social distance, just, be careful. And we can all just do our parts to make sure that the economy keeps ticking and that we all stay healthy and safe. So that's been it for this edition of the Business Day Spotlight. Remember that you can find our latest podcast on Business Live. That's under the podcast Business Day Spotlight tab on Twitter, where hashtag BD Spotlight. And remember that you can review and subscribe for free on iono.fm, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Pocket Casts, or wherever you choose to get your pods casted. Thank you to our amazing team. Our producer is Paige Muller, together with Modiehi Mashemaete. I've been Mudiwa Gavaza of the Business Day and Financial Mail, and this has been another edition of the Business Day Spotlight, which is a multimedia live production. So for myself and the rest of the team, it is good evening, good afternoon, and good morning.